the future does not exist.
Hello, everyone. Yes, I suppose it is a welcome for me to you from a sunny Leiden. It's absolutely glorious day, 4th of June. The strawberry moon has descended from the heavens, and now we have a day of blue skies ahead of us. I'm joined by Marcel.
Yes, Marcel is here.
Damien isn't. Damien's somewhere else, I think. Somewhere else.
Yes, he's like a Richard, but then on a different location.
On a Damien location, yeah. Yes. So he's somewhere, but just a pair of us today to talk about things mostly based around...
Don't worry, we still like each other.
Sort of.
It's not that we don't want to be in a room together anymore.
No, it's just, it's that time of year where people might know that I'm also a booker, and also it's a sort of a weird time for both holidays, festivals. The music season really kicks off now for clubs. So from May till sort of July, it's crazy in the clubs. And then August, it's festivals. And that's something we're going to talk about, actually. We're not going to talk about the big festival season, which is like Lowlands. And we're not going to talk about things like Pink Pop. I think we've already talked about that in a previous episode. But we're going to talk about free festivals, which start... pretty much around now, and then they run throughout the year, probably till about September, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and I think there used to be a lot more, of course.
Yeah.
Do you also went to festivals when you were still in England?
No, I wasn't. You know, I was the most unfestival guy ever, and I still am. You know, I very rarely go to festivals that have anything to do with fields or grass. I'm always... You know, I don't get my heels dirty at them, apart from Halden Pop in Germany.
Yeah.
And every other festival I do is either for work reasons or they're in cities, you know, promoting big places like, you know, Vilnius or Tallinn or where have you, you know. They're never normally on beaches or in fields. I sort of stay away from them.
And what kind of festival visitor are you? Are you one that spends like 2 weeks in advance looking at the program and...
Oh, God, no.
...creating a route that you have to go to?
Never. Or I've never ever like, done that.
Or are you more like, where is it? What kind of location is it?
I'm more interested in... it's sort of weird, is that? I just like go along. I'm even when it's a festival that I'm working at or, you know, I'm reviewing, I'm very rarely... sort of drawn towards making a timetable or a schedule. I go by whim, and I always find that that's actually quite a nice way to do it. Or what I also do is if I'm somewhere, I'll stay in a place I like. So if I'm in a location that's really nice,
yeah,
I think, hey, I'm going to see how the night develops over a particular, you know, over the program, rather than running between, because I did that a few times, and it's just soul destroying, because you end up half the time frustrated trying to get in, and then you get in, you think, oh, I've got to go away again, you know, and you don't really see what happens. And I think that also is a thing that annoys bands quite a bit, you know. They see audiences come in and then they go away, and you know, and I always think it's a really weird trade off festivals, you know, between needing the attention, enjoying yourself, but also realizing you've got to make something of both the fact you spent money, a lot of money, or the fact that you're going to have hopefully someone in the audience who might, you know, take it on somewhere else if you're a band. So no, mate, I'm not really, I try to, you know, I try to break the template of what you're supposed to do, really, and just do what I want.
Yeah. No, okay.
So yeah, the festivals we're talking about actually are sort of are quite unique to the Netherlands in a way, in that there's a lot less of them. Mm-hmm. But when I first came here, what I really noticed was the sort of civic nature of these festivals. So you'd have things like, you know, Lisse, for example, would have a pop festival. I think Tulp Pop or something that's still going.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, Haarlem has got a brilliant one called Hout Festival, which we're going to talk about at length in a bit. And then you'd have things like in Leiden here, you had Verf Pop, which used to be right in the middle of town. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can just go on and on and on. Every sort of municipality would have a festival with local bands, sometimes really surprising, interesting bands that would be, you know, obviously been looking for a date and then some festival had booked it and it was like, you know, oh my God, you know, what are, I mean, who was it who played Verve Pop that time? Oh God, I've forgotten them. It was the band that have the song You Suffer and it's about 20 seconds and I've forgotten the name of the band and it's really annoying. God. Oh shit. We'll come back to it in a minute.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's not Extreme Noise Terror, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was really struck by how sort of organised all these things were for the local populace, you know. It was a case of, oh yeah, and then you're going to have your summer festival. All the families turned up. It's free. You could just walk in with all your own drinks. You know, you could get suitably wasted. You know, it was just like, just a big day out in a field or a park, you know?
Yeah, it were festivals that were run by people who had passion for doing it, and they those people are still around. But what I think what changed is they were able to make the festival happen because of the amount of money that was making they were making at the bars.
Yeah.
Because it was also like an excuse to drink a lot of beers.
Oh, it was chaos. It was chaos. I mean, Verve Pop, we could start with Verve Pop, which is in Leiden.
Yeah.
I remember it being about 2001, going to 2001 Verve Pop in the old Van der Werf Park, which is situated in one of the most pleasant neighbourhoods of Leiden. Mm-hmm. And it was just an absolute, it was like a Bruegel painting, you know. There's people just rolling around, falling into the Rhine and into the canal. And it's just like, oh, God almighty. It was
and
absolute
massive,
chaos.
Massive statue in the middle.
Yeah, of Van der Werf. It's actually a very interesting place that because it was all blown up. I think at some point in 1806, 1807, it was one of the biggest disasters in Leiden. I think it was like a gunpowder explosion, munitions.
Was it there?
Yeah, it was there. It blew up the entire area. Yeah.
Yeah.
And therefore, they made a park in about 1900, I think. I think the military, I think one of the regiments of the line in the Netherlands used to practice on there. Like they're,
could be.
Yeah, I'm boring.
You're the military guy.
I'm the military guy, yeah. You're right.
You should notice.
I'm sort of boring about these things. But I found out that, you know, some regiments of the Dutch army would drill there. And then it became a corporate park, I think, about 1900 or...
Yeah, it's interesting that we call it a park because it's for... if you look at it and you're used to huge parks, city parks, this is not that big.
No,
it's quite tiny.
It's tiny. But they'd have two stages there, didn't they? They used to have two stages.
Yeah, definitely.
And one of them is huge and it was just deafening. And I remember that first one, I can't remember who was on. There was actually some really good bands on, but of course time has eluded me in terms of remembering the names of the lineup. I suppose we could check it online. But it was just carnage.
Definitely.
It was just carnage. There's just drunks everywhere, you know, and people just passed out under the trees and, you know, doing other things to each other. I was thinking, what the hell is this? it was amazing. It was free. You know, it was crazy. And that was the same for, I mean, there's the other one, the other big one that most people know of is Park Pop in Den Haag.
Yeah.
And that's huge.
Yeah.
And that would attract quite a crowd because all the punks in Den Haag, all the squatters.
Definitely, yeah.
And that was, I remember seeing, you have a quite good lineups there. I mean, Blondie played there and, you know, it was like...
It was always very interesting to see how many big names Park Pop got, but also how many big names like a Werf Pop play.
The band I remember, it's Napalm Death. Do you remember when Napalm Death played? Now we remember. Yeah, of course, I remembered. I thought You Suffer, it's Napalm Death. But Napalm Death played to the bourgeois and sort of working class of Leiden, who were all suitably nonplussed by the extreme noise at Napalm Death, in the field. Wild.
I remember an edition of Werf Pop where I think Atari Teenage Riot played.
Oh yeah, they did. Atari Teenage Riot played as well.
That was
also
shocking to a lot of people.
Yeah, because the thing is, the lineups normally they would be leavened out by nice party bands. You'd have bands who would have a suitably tropical or meridional, is that a word, flavor to it. So it'd be, you know, like nice Brazilian beats for people, for families to swing their kids around to. There'd always be a band that would be a Dutch chant, Levenslied kind of thing.
Usually, yeah.
There'd always be some kind of happy hardcore thing that would all sort of, but a social kind of thing with lyrics on it, you know, it was always funny. And, you know, shout out to people like Barry Badpack in that respect, is Leiden's sort of party ravers. There would
I think in the early days it would be more rock oriented.
Yeah.
It changed a bit more to hip hop and now it's more electronics.
Yeah. There's always something interesting on these things. So you'd have these festivals and, you know, the ones we've mentioned, the one in Den Haag and Leiden, would have more of this kind of working class, kind of lower social orders kind of feel to it. It's quite tough and everyone absolutely bloody wasted. And the other one, the other famously free one was Metropolis in Rotterdam.
Yeah.
Which again would have an amazing line. The lineups at Metropolis were amazing.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, Interpol, was weird to see how they did it.
I still think there was one, I think it was 2002-03, Interpol played. I've seen Breaks there. I've seen Electrolane. I've seen everyone. That period when all those British and American bands are coming over in the early noughties, that was the best place to go and see loads of bands for nothing. And it was.
Yeah.
It was. Again, it was wild. And there you had to buy drinks at one point because I think they were running out of money because everyone was bringing stuff in. But for a day out, in fact, it was over for 2 days, wasn't it? Metropolis, was it?
No,
was it Metropolis just one?
Was only one day.
But it was just wild because it was about seven stages.
Yeah.
And you could just have the best time there. And it was really, really special. I think that stopped about 2010, 11, something, in terms of the way that it was, you know.
Yeah, I think people, it probably also had to do with the people that showed up for a festival like that. I think they could be less and less dependent on making money at the bars.
True.
Because people were already also like figuring out that they could bring their own stuff. So, and I can imagine that if you are going to a festival and you're 16 and you bring some drinks with you in the bag and you're like, I don't have money to pay you.
Exactly. And Rotterdam has always had quite a colourful kind of crowd in terms of its social behaviour. It was always like, I remember that one always dodging pit bull terriers. At one point there were so many sort of trophy dogs walking around with owners who were clearly out of their minds.
Yeah.
And that was also the other side to it, wasn't it? It was, but I remember we saw some, I think it was Senor Coconut play there, you know, the guy who plays sort of tropicalia versions of Kraftwerk. I think also that was the first time I ever saw the new Frolicide. In 2005, I think, maybe. Maybe 2005. Because, again, that was something else to touch on, was the fact that there'd always be a locals stage.
Yeah.
And that was always, like, the least attended. And it was always, like, the people who were doing the stage had no idea who the bands were. Because, you know, who gave a shit about Dutch music around 2004-05?
Yeah, not many people were focused on that anymore.
No, and that was interesting. And I remember talking to my friend Alina, and she said, you're going to go and see my friend's band, they're great. Mm-hmm. They're really good. You really like them. And this must have been 2005.
Yeah.
And I went, and it was the new Frolicide. And I was thinking, who the hell is this? You know, sort of dark rhythms and like quite proto-gothic, sort of gothic Sid Barrett kind of thing going down. It was like very much Piper at the Gates of Dawn, but driven by this pipe smoking, drumming Asian lad who is very flamboyant, shall we say, and like really great guitar, really interesting drums. It's like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, but it was also very interesting because you had the feeling that that playing songs could also turn into a fight beyond, between band members.
Oh, that, yeah. Well, that always was. That, the whole point of the Denouer Frolicard for me was their internal combustion.
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, any minute Vincent would like kick over everything that he was doing.
Yeah.
And then just sit there and sulk, or, you know, kick off or read some inspired poetry. I mean, there's a gig once a bit later, mm-hmm. a year and a half later, where he played in front of then Haag's pop sensations direct in the bar of Parvin Troje.
Yeah.
Where he just literally knocked everything over and sat there and smoked his meerschaum on stage moaning. I can't remember why, but it was brilliant.
Yeah, but I
remember, you know, all the sort of the professionals there just like sneering at it. And I was thinking, this is the best thing in ages. But so that was weird. When you go back to those festivals, they'd have these stages where inevitably a sort of baseball capped young presenter would have no idea who these people were.
Yeah.
And then it would just be a procession of Dutch bands who were playing in front of about 15 kids or their friends. Mm-hmm. And it was very much a side event. And, you know, one of the good things about the developments of these festivals is that completely changed. And then Dutch music became much, in terms of, you know, alternative musics, became much more centered,
yeah,
you know, into the programming, you know? But that was a very clear memory of Metropolis, going to see that.
Yeah. But I think also a very interesting aspect of those kinds of festivals, and especially the very local ones. Mm. It was about seeing a music and enjoying music, but it was also the perfect excuse to get together with some friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Some friends that you see on a regular basis, but also friends that you only see once a year on that festival.
Yeah, that was the other thing. That was very true. I remember that people would just like meet up every year at this one festival and that'd be it. That was really weird to me, but it was like also really sort of nice, because you thought, well, you know, they know that's in the calendar.
Yeah, and I'll go there those people will probably be there, and I'll be there for an hour, and it turns out that you will be there all night, and because it was funny and you met more and more people that you were not expecting to see there.
Yeah, I remember actually probably meeting you at Verve Pop when mm-hmm. you were walking around with that camera, because you were filming the Julie Mittens. I think that's about 2003. Oh, it's a long time ago. It was the only other time. Yeah, I think it was actually, because you had a camera and you were filming the Julie Mittens because they played Verve Pop.
We did a couple of things there.
Yeah, there's that we should go. I want to talk about Verve Pop a bit. But talking about the Julie Mittens, there was also a festival, a poetry literary festival, which is free, and that was also in the middle on the Old Rhine, the Alder Rhein.
Do you
remember that, where they actually
were playing on the bridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
Now, for people who don't know the Julie Mittens, it's important to mention that they are akin
loud.
To... Yeah, yeah, Swans kind of loud, freeform rock. The records are extremely inspiring. I think April June is one of the great Dutch noise records. Mm-hmm. But they're not really for a sort of a dapper middle-aged poetry festival where you have a lot of readings and then suddenly this lot turn up. And I'm not really sure in what context they got booked.
No, I think I can understand it, because you want to do something else, and already having a poetry festival at that spot in the city, because it was on the bridge and the bridge was overlooked by a couple of bars there on the canal.
And of course and the town regular, hall.
but the regular people coming to those bars might not be the most poetry oriented people.
No, they weren't, and I don't really think they were the most Julie Mittens oriented people.
No, definitely not.
given the exodus that happened as soon as they'd like played about 20 seconds, mm-hmm. I've never seen so many people leave.
Yeah,
but that was also brilliant, because it was just the sort of thing that you couldn't imagine anywhere else but the Netherlands. You know, oh, we have to cater for every social group. Therefore, we shall have, you know, we'll have a reading of some T.S. Eliot, and we're going to have what amounts to Swans on an open bridge.
Yeah.
You know? And that was great. I mean, there's also another festival that was like that was Single Fest, or the one on the single. Do you remember? It's the one on the water, you know? It just went round...
The Rappenberg?
Oh, Rappenberg, I beg your pardon. Yeah, the Rappenberg Fest.
Yeah,
they had
but that's
they had weird lineups though. Again,
yeah, I know, and it's also and it, it's a very weird festival.
Yeah, because they had. I remember seeing Robbie Lakatos as in the incredible Hungarian fiddler with his entire band, his Romani band. It's brilliant. And then next to it, after it was some sort of absolutely awful kids' music. And I'm thinking, who's programming this? And how? You know,
it was like, very interesting because it was in a way they were trying to do the in Amsterdam you have the Prinsengracht concert.
Yeah,
and this is like the smaller version of it. And you have all the people with the boats trying to get there and chaos in the streets. And yeah,
it chaos was, in the water, chaos in the streets.
Chaos everywhere. And it's also interesting. But I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, I think it's still happening.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. And it's one of these things where you're just wondering how in hell's name does it A, carry on, or B, who on earth is organising it because of the way it's set up? But it's, you know, it's great. I like the sort of nature of these things being quite chaotic.
Yeah.
I mean, one other one we should talk about is Houtfest in Harlem, which is actually brilliant. And I don't want to sound like I'm doing the PR for Houtfest, but like the lineups are always amazing, as in, you know,
For Dutch standards, they're very exotic.
Oh my God, yeah. For Dutch standards, this is proper kind of BIM house programming. Mm-hmm. Fendika, you know, you've got incredible Ethiopian singers there. Normally a lot of, I think it's because, you know, a lot of Thai surf music, Dutch punk, you know, you name it, it's been there. It's always really good. I think that's because of two factors. First of all, it's aiming at a particular market, which is like well-off intellectual people who live in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the people who are booking it are very well connected in the world music booking scene, but I suppose I've just used it. So it's that kind of thing where it's international kinds of sounds rather than it just being
they have a different focus if you compare it to other festivals.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I've probably seen some of the best gigs ever for free. Mm-hmm. There's always something really, really exciting, whether it's like sort of Ethiopian wedding music. Yeah, whether it's like it's Dokumus Lakalsi. I can never say that properly. Like, sort of that's Frisian sort of avant-garde punk. The X played there. You know, just, I mean, everyone, as I said, Thai surf music. I've seen everything there, really.
Yeah, and it's a... I'm trying to figure out if it's also still a free festival.
It's totally free.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they've got a really good lineup this year, actually. They've got Blanco Teta playing. They're also playing Worm, which is, wait for this, listeners, they're sort of queer cello-based Colombian-Argentinian goth. Not for the faint-hearted, but great nonetheless. And I think that they're playing the night before in their patronat, and I think that's also free. So they have, it's... I think it's really weird. It's like that Uncle Monty quote in Whistler Night. It's free to those who can afford it. You know, it's really obviously like aimed at Harlem, aimed at the sort of the rich areas around Harlem.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously open and also much more lax in terms of its security. So you can rock up with your slab of ale and your sandwiches, and it's not like they're expecting the troglodytes to wreck it like they would do in Worth Pop and Park Pop, because the security, that's something else we should talk about is security has completely changed in our time over these things, hasn't it?
Yeah,
and really strict
it does matter where you are. I think still if you go to Worth Pop, yes, it has changed and the security has become different, but still they're okay. Definitely if you compare them to a security at anything in The Hague.
Oh yeah.
Or anything in Rotterdam.
Yeah, security in The Hague, Rotterdam, Amsterdam is pretty, yeah. I mean, you know, you're supposed to be having a day out, you know, it's quite hair scaring. But yeah, it's, Worth Pop's okay. I mean,
and if you think about it more than 5 minutes, you can figure out why they need to have some security there and why it's not the nicest thing in the world to try to bring in your own, all your own beers.
Yeah, yeah.
If you bring one, then usually it's not that big of an issue. But if you're trying to bring a lot of in, I can imagine that they want this festival to be there the next year.
Yeah, and the plan, the planning is you just rock up with an ale, you finish it in front of the security guy, say, that's it, I finished it. And you put it in the bin and you go, right, that's it. And then you go in. It's nothing difficult, is it?
No.
I also remember Verfpot being a crazy thing. I mean, I must remember this to write about, because I remember, were you there that time when they had that guy juggling chainsaws?
Ooh.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I've been to
a lot of them. But like I said, I also been to a couple of them where I was doing other things or being way too social to actually see a band.
Yeah. I remember just turning up thinking, there's a guy juggling chainsaws. Mm-hmm. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
I think that was about 2002, something like that. And then I think Tice from Destruct, he was DJing, I think it was across from us. Yeah, this really heavy dub reggae and a guy juggling chainsaws.
Yeah.
And this is like, you know, the municipality's idea of fun. I was like, wow, it's like University City. This is great. I think that was the first year they moved it to the park, the Leidse House.
Yeah.
About 2002, I think.
Yeah, I think the most horrible addition was the one that they did on the Garemarkt.
Oh God!
They
did
one on this square on top of a which is now on top where they now build a parking.
Mm.
But that year they had to move out of the park, out of Van der Werf Park, because
it just looked like the Battle of the Somme. It was just a mess.
It took about a year for the grass to recover, and then the festival would be there again.
Yeah,
and it went well for a couple of years, but then it was the grass didn't survive.
No.
And so they moved it to the first time they tried to do it on a square, which was horrible. But
yeah.
Having a festival on a square is just a horrible idea.
Yeah, it's terrible. I never got that why festivals were just like on sort of concrete. Because it's just like the most unappetizing place to, I mean, yeah, the thing is, concrete doesn't soak up the piss and the beer that's just been spilt everywhere. And he's just rattling around with all these cups and stuff. And then, there's nowhere to sit.
No.
So and then if it's sunny, all the sun reflects off the concrete and it's like, God,
it's horrible. And heinous, then they moved it to Leidse Hout, which is actually a very nice place to have a festival.
I think it's perfect, yeah.
And which is actually also a proper park.
Yeah.
I really like that space, to be honest.
Yeah, for those who've never been or imagine this abroad, it's a really nice park just on the outskirts of Leiden Centre.
Yeah.
And it's basically like this massive natural amphitheatre surrounded by trees. So it's a really long, rectangular field and completely surrounded by trees. So the noise is kept in there. It can be very, it's like a heat trap as well.
I think it depends on who you ask.
Yeah, probably. I suppose so. But it's actually it's a really nice setting.
Yeah.
And it's a nice park. So it's moved there. And when is it again? Is it July? Isn't it last week of June?
Beginning of July.
First week of July. That's sort of that kind of time.
Yeah.
Because I think Houtfest, the one in Haarlem, where you just rock up again. It's in a very nice park.
Mm-hmm.
That's the middle of June, 18th, I think, this year. So it's always around the solstice.
Yeah.
The Park Pop, I think
is late
July, I think. Metropolis is always the first weekend or second weekend of July, so it's like June, July is the big period for these things,
and before people really go on their summer holiday,
precisely, or go to Lowlands or what have you. And that's we're only talking about the west of the south, the South Netherlands area, but this will be replicated everywhere. I think there's a couple of independent festivals this year, one in just north of Groningen. What is that? Winsome Fest, I think it is. That's
18th
of
July. That's also, I think it's also a local one that's becoming bigger and bigger because people are noticing it.
Yeah. There's quite a lot, but if you can go, you go in the country,
But that's the fun thing of those festivals. They usually start off because some friends got together and
let's
do a festival.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's do it in summer because summer is a cool time to do festivals.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just grown, hasn't it? And it's so it's a good, you know, if you can go along to a lot of free things and watch gigs and bands and the rest of it. It's always interesting to see the nature of the people though turn up. It's people, as you said, people who come once a year to go out with the families, people who meet up once a year, one or two sort of dedicated, I mean, dedicated music fans are literally about 2% of the audience probably, I'd say. And also the other thing I like about it, that there's not really many police really, is it? It's like local security rather than being coppers.
No, like I said, it's usually the one official person that you really meet is at the door. Get in, and after that you're just on the festival grounds.
So
people are probably looking after you, but you don't really notice it.
True. Yeah,
it's a very like what is it, it's a very nice atmosphere, cozy space, and
I'd agree with that.
I think there's still a lot of social control from everybody else looking at you like, okay,
don't be a fool.
Tim, let's have a small talk and calm him down a bit.
Yeah, that's also really nice about these things. You never see, it's more the crowd deals with any silly nonsense, don't they?
Yeah, because there's usually at least one or two people that know the person that's causing the trouble or, it's usually a gathering of friends.
There you go. Gathering of friends. So those are the festivals, and they've an important backdrop to the Netherlands in terms of social, cultural things, man. And I wanted to talk about another thing as well, culturally.
Yeah.
Is bikes, right? I don't think we've
really... Yeah, you just came in with your fancy new bike.
I did, man. It's really fancy.
I've got how did you call it? It was your...
It's my baby.
It's your baby?
It's my baby. It's my...
English man calling a bike his baby.
This is worrying. This is... I'm really getting ingeburgerd. Like, oh, shit. This really beautiful VSF.
And yes, you have also the bags for the bike.
Yeah, I've got the two bags at the bike, you know. I can officially move house now.
I'm the only disappointing for me is that it doesn't have like very colourful flowers on it.
I could have those little sort of things that you put on the spokes, you know, to make the noise, which is...
Which
is something, if you don't know, that's a... I think that's a very Dutch thing to put. They're like these little sort of beads or little plastic sort of beads that you put onto the spokes and they all move around when you're cycling.
Yeah, if you're 10.
If you're 10, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them on older bike. But it's quite a girl thing, but like, well, maybe. But it's... I don't have a basket on the front.
No.
Which is another very Dutch thing to have.
But that's just bound to happen.
At some point.
Because you want to carry more stuff around.
Yeah, this is... So we're going to talk about bikes and carrying stuff. And what are bikes for in the Netherlands? And that might sound like a really stupid question. But they've changed in the last 20 years, the use of bikes.
Yeah.
Because if I remember going back, it was just like... You go to the campsite, just get a bike, and they'd be shit. But, you know, you'd have a bike to work, and, you know, it would probably cost more to get it mended than the bike cost itself. That was always the case, wasn't it? You know, you'd find a bike, you know. But there's been a shift away in styles of bikes, uses of bikes in the last 20 years. It's really noticeable. And we should mention the elephant in the room now, which is the backfeeds. Right, because
the you mean the like the current backfeeds, urban arrows,
the urban backfeeds, the sort of and for those again who don't know what a back in Netherlands is, roughly translated as a box or a sort of a container
or a buffer for your kids between you and the upcoming car.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're using your children as the buffer in the back. And what was noticeable over, I think this is about 2015, about 10 years ago, let's say, 2013, 14, 15, you go to Amsterdam and you'd see these sort of like, what the hell is that? And it was like, it looks like some kind of wheelbarrow on a bike. And then at the front you've got the two kids strapped in and the mum or the dad are cycling away with the Benz in the front, and you're thinking, oh well, you know, it's charmingly Amsterdam, you know, it's some local thing, you know. And then the last 10 years it's exploded, to actually incorporate a phrase that is like quite a derogatory phrase aimed at sort of, you know, upper middle class, mostly women, cycling around in these things, which is Bakfietsmoeder.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about the idea of, like, you know, if you can afford one of these bikes for your kids and everything, and, you know, you're swanning around Amsterdam,
yeah,
you know, you must be posh, you must be, you know, annoying, and these bikes are annoying.
Yeah, and they more and more become electric now.
Oh yeah.
Well, which means that they go even faster.
The electric back feeds, which is like, you know, the least safe thing ever for kids is like at the front of this unwieldy huge wheelbarrow of a bike,
yeah,
with your kids strapped in, who are normally about 2-3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a song by punk band Lasagna, Lasagna, if you want to look it up, about back feeds, like giving him the finger, and which is great. Go and listen to it. But it's, that's really noticeable, these sort of these back feeds. And, you know, I'm sat across from Marcel, who had, I wouldn't say it's a back feed, but can you explain the sort of the squatting version of that, which is like from the 1990s, 2000s?
That was a different kind of back feed.
Precisely, yeah.
Because that was a buck, which is like a square.
A square container
kind of thing. Which welded on was a bike, and the idea was that you could move a whole house, all the stuff that was in a house, you can move it into the container and move it around.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was also how most of the squatters moved around from squat, or getting beers for the parties, or doing whatever they needed. But it was huge.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I remember. Oh, the one very interesting I remember is us moving stuff around on a Bakfiets for a festival.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure if you remember.
Oh, I do,
because helpful people during this operation.
Yeah,
which was you,
Tony
Gerloff.
Was it Tony as well? Welsh Tony?
No, Tony was in charge of kitchen stuff.
Oh, yeah, he was kitchening, wasn't he? Yeah.
And I was with you, Gerloff, and what was the other guy that we did the festival with? Loy,
yeah. Loy
it was Kessel. A festival called Kulturbabar.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And we needed to move the PA around.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the start of the festival was pretty okay, because it was during daytime that we moved stuff from the LVC to the location.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the night, we had to bring it back.
Oh shit, yeah, I remember it.
And
night.
I was, I had these three helping hands.
Yeah.
Completely drunk, trying to help me move this massive cargo bike across Leiden center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On a busy Saturday night.
I remember that going back very vaguely.
Yes.
I remember being about, like, I don't know, about midnight till 1 o'clock, like trying manfully to suppress my drunkenness and also trying to move an amp around. I think we had to get it up some stairs, didn't we, at some point? I remember the stairs.
Yeah, we did a lot of stuff with that. But it moved the whole PA system for a festival.
Yeah.
And I always was surprised how hard it was to move a thing like that around the corner.
Oh God, yeah.
Because it has the span of a huge, like a big truck.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean,
and if you're not careful enough, it will tip over.
It was just insane, because what you had, it wasn't really like the back feast we've been talking about, the sort of the more streamlined, the more like, they go into more of a weird kind of oblong kind of shape.
Yeah, you can compare it to if you put a trailer on your car.
But
it's like
the front.
That, but then with a bike attached to it.
Exactly, and it's at the front. It's not at the back. So if you imagine a car trailer, imagine you are steering a car trailer from behind, you know? And this was this huge thing. I remember thinking, God, I'm actually on a proper squatter's, you know, sort of moving bike. Because I think these things were used for things like getting cartwheels or
anything,
you know, and this is like 1920s, 1930s Dutch kind of moving things around, rag and bone man kind of thing. But it was, but you know, the squatters really took this over and you could move everything. So we were that gig, which I think was 2010, 11, something like that. We were moving it with amps, with I just remember other things being there.
You can move anything with
it. Did someone actually get in it as well? Was someone?
No, there wasn't room in it. There was way too much stuff in it.
Oh God, yeah, that was traumatic.
But it's very interesting because for moving stuff within a city like Leiden, it's a very useful tool.
Yeah,
and that's why it was. That's why we used it. It was way easier than loading it up in a van and driving around.
Yeah. I mean, that, I would actually think that it would be such a great green idea if someone could actually, not the, the back feeds of kids, but like a proper back feeds that you could just use to move amps around a city.
Yeah, but can you imagine? That would be so dangerous. Yeah. And I think they made it electric as well because you also had the Brommer, Brommer bikes.
Yeah. Yeah,
they didn't have a bike, a cycle, a bicycle attached to it, but more like a moped.
Yeah,
and those were really dangerous to move around, and you really had to had some experience moving those stuff around.
Oh my God, yeah, those mopeds were horrific.
But it's also from the same time. It's also very interesting because it's a very Dutch thing to move everything on your bike, because I know my parents, if they went shopping for groceries, they had like four bags on their handlebars, a kid in the back, two of those bags on either side of the those grocery bags on the side of the
saddle
bike.
Bags.
The saddle bags, and they would get on it and drive around to watch home.
I never got this. You know, this whole idea like Dutch on the side. It's brilliant how you can put things onto your steering wheel, your steering, what do you call it? You know, your steer.
Yeah.
And that is so difficult because if you don't do that properly, if your hands aren't in the right place, you can fall off real quick.
Yeah.
I remember, but yeah, you're right. Actually, we moved house using our bikes pretty much, you know what I mean? And you can do, it's amazing how much you can actually carry on a bike. If you've got enough room up the back, but also on the front, because there's a way on your steering interstices at the front where your wheel is, you can actually put an awful lot there where the basket, you know, where a basket normally can be put, but you can also rest it on in the right in the middle, as long as you can see and as long as you've got your hand on the brake, you're all right. You can carry tons. Put a stereo on there once. It's just like,
oh yeah. If you're lucky and you're sitting on a busy road in anywhere in Holland, you can see the most amazing stuff go by on a bike.
That's really true.
Especially if you're in a student town, you see the most crazy stuff being moved around that way.
It is wild. And it's like people just think it's there as a bike, so it means a conveyance. No. This is moving shit. This is like the movement of goods.
This is a very useful alternative for a car.
Yeah, it is. You see, we care. We care about the environment. It is. But I never forget the whole thing about, We've just mentioned electric bikes, which is the last 3 years has been the thing where normally, you know, you'd overtake people who were senior.
Yeah.
But now suddenly you see these like 18-year-olds going past you like they're on a Brummer. You know what I mean? Silent menace, isn't it? It's chaos, I think.
Yeah, it's not even a Brummer. It's electric, so you don't hear them.
You know, you don't hear anything.
Or you see them in the way, way far away, and then you're like, okay, I have nothing to worry, and then they're there.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not wearing helmets, and they're like, and they're in the 70s and 80s, and you're thinking, what are you doing? It's fly past you.
Yeah, but there's this, I think, I'm not sure where the drop-off date is, but there's this date that if you were born before that, you don't wear a helmet.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because those people before that date find helmets on a bike the most stupid adventure ever.
That's so crazy, isn't it? I mean, I'm toying with getting a helmet, I have to admit, because I do think it's quite important to, you know, to look after your head. But like, there's also this kind of thing about culture in the Netherlands, like you don't put waterproofs on and you don't wear a helmet. No. You know, like, why do you want to, like, I was like, why do you want to get your pants wet? It's like, yeah, but it's raining. It's nothing. And people just turn up, like, get wet. They weren't bothered. They weren't bothered about getting wet legs.
No.
Like, I mean, you're just looking at me like, why? Yeah, why do you want to wear rain? Yeah. Why do you want to wear rain pants? Because it's raining, you know?
It's like, yeah, but it's very annoying because you have to take them put off. Them on, yeah, take yeah. them off, and they're already, like, plasticky and...
Yeah.
You will not be wet from the rain, but you will be wet from the sweat. So it doesn't really improve.
No.
Anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
And the stuff with wearing a helmet, you should just learn to bike better.
There you go.
If you have the feeling that you need a helmet, maybe you should try biking more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there is this.
So you in see less this. Dangerous environments.
These are the unwritten code of the Dutch bicycle sort of fraternity. But it is, I always find it very interesting to see how they've changed because bikes have got much more expensive. There's much more designer bike.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, you know, particular kinds, obviously the electric bike, but you go back 20 years. What I do miss, actually, mm-hmm. are the old sort of step-on bikes that you'd see that elderly ladies would... cycle of 20 years, like say 20 years ago,
yeah,
they'd have this sort of the sort of classic old fashioned 1940s big black bike, which is actually really good. Yeah. There was a little basket at the front, they've got that sort of swan kind of shape, you know. And ladies of a certain age will always get off their bike at the crossing.
And oh, yeah, stand. Yeah, you can, yeah.
And that kind of bike where you could easily just step onto it, do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because there's no bar which you had to throw your leg over.
No, but that's a woman's bike.
Yeah.
And then you have the guy's bike, which has
the bar. But the interesting thing is those classic sort of 1950s ladies' bikes, you don't really see.
The Oma bikes.
Oh, there we go. Here we go. The grandma bikes.
Yes.
Now we're getting into a deep
and
subject.
They also had the round thing to sit on.
Yeah.
The saddle.
The saddle was really different from every other saddle.
Yeah, it was easy to get on and off.
Yeah. And there's a specific way of riding those bikes.
Yeah.
You know, you come to the lights, you get off the bike, mm-hmm. and then you sort of walk two or three steps and then get on the bike.
Yeah. And jump on it.
Yeah, that was a really different kind of way of etiquette that is, but you only did it on that particular bike, didn't you?
And it had the big bar on the back that you... move down to make it stable and stand.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
you got out, yeah, got
it's
off
this
it.
Big bar. Instead of having a little sort of kick bar, you'd have this huge bar you could drop and then sort of push the bike back into it, so it'd be a stabilizer kind of thing when you were parked. I sort of miss those because I think they're really good bikes when you're on one. They're really comfortable and safe, and quite quick. Yeah, but they're not made for men, really. It's like there's also a
you can still ride on it. It's not that strange.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's true. I always quite liked them. You know, I thought, oh, I wouldn't mind having one of those mm-hmm. until I got my baby. That is, which is now you know my expensive.
Did you hear the story from our colleague Damien and his bike?
This is his pride and joy of the electric thing.
Yeah, his electric thing with the big tires.
Yeah, it looks more like it should have a machine gun on it, really. You know, yeah. I mean, it needs to be weaponized.
It doesn't need a machine gun to be illegal.
No, because it is though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, because he was, that was also very interesting. We were talking about it last week, not in the episode, but afterwards. Uh-huh. And he told me that it was raining, he was driving on it, and it's also electric, so it goes... Mm-hmm.
Reasonably fast.
But if you need to go from the station to your house and it's raining, it's the perfect way of transport.
Yeah.
So he was like, I think one street away from his house mm-hmm. and he was stopped by the police.
Really?
Yes. And he was like, okay. So they came up to me like, and he was trying to be like, okay, I'm sort of in trouble because I know this bike is not really legal. Uh-huh. So they told him like, hey, dude, this bike, it's not okay because it's sort of illegal and it's not good. And he's like, oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
He's really turning into a Dutchman as well.
Yeah, yeah, the whole sort of
trying to figure out that he can get into a conversation with a policeman.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, okay, what should I do? And the policeman said, you should use this bike to drive around on your own land. And he's like, yeah, but I only have a small garden. And then the policeman said to him, like, then maybe you should consider selling it.
Right.
Because if we see you around on it again, we will definitely give you a fine for it.
Wow. Wow. So, like, why were these things made illegal? There was a reason for it, wasn't there? Because it was at the beginning of this year they were made illegal.
Yeah, because they go way too fast.
Right. So it's, what is the speed limit now for bikes on a road? Is it about 30?
I'm not sure. I think it's the sort of this, it depends on, I think those bikes are just, they go too way too fast and are, you're not really that protective on that bike.
No, hold your back. Yeah, for those who don't know, Damien's bike really does look like some sort of like military kind of equipment, really.
Yeah,
black as well. It's sort of, you know, it's got the whole hard guy thing going to it. But I know, it's a really heavy thing, isn't it? It's like, it's big. Because those electric bikes are heavy as hell.
Yeah, they're heavy and they, But I think if you don't have a Brommer, but you have Snorfiets.
Snorfiets, yeah.
I think it's sort of equivalent to a Snorfiets.
Shall we explain to our English English speaking listeners or foreign listeners, what is a Snorfiets?
A Snorfiets? Yeah, but that's easy. A Snorfiets is like a moped.
Yeah.
Which is not going as fast. A normal moped in Holland is, I think it's 40 kilometers and up.
Which is known as a Brummer, because the brum noise that it makes.
And then a Snorfiets, I think it officially is allowed to go up 25 kilometers. And the benefit of it that you don't have to wear a helmet on it.
That's right. The interesting thing about Snorfiets is that...
And then you have the scooter.
Yeah, which is...
Which is another thing.
Which is going to come on to. The scooter is another thing. So you've got the Brummer, the Snorfiets, and the scooter.
Yes.
Now, the Snorfiets are really irritating for two reasons. First of all, back in the noughties... all the paper route boys would use Snorfiets to deliver papers at 6 in the morning.
Yes.
And a Snorfiets sounds like an angry wasp, basically amplified. So it just sounds like this really annoying, like, blue bottle waspy kind of sound, loud.
Yeah.
And then it just go, and it'd stop. And then and they'd hear it all the way down the street as the guy couldn't be arsed getting off his bike. I just pushed a bit of paper through and you'd hear that and it would wake you up every bloody morning.
Yes.
Now that's gone now because now that's
what it's been like taken over by electric bikes and scooters.
Yeah. So in many ways, you know, the one great saving grace about electric bikes is the fact that they don't make that kind of noise and it's not outside your door.
Yeah.
And of course, people don't get papers delivered anymore, but like back in the day, that was really bloody annoying to hear the Snorfiets.
Papers are the paper things with the news in it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The things that you see on your telephone.
Yeah, yeah. So it's... That's a dying thing, but the scooter. Now that is another game altogether.
Yeah, because it's also divided up into how fast it goes. If it goes like 20-25, it's a scooter that you don't have to wear a helmet on. If it goes up, and I think 40, somewhere between 40 and 50 is allowed, but everything up there is not really allowed.
No.
And it can stop you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And this you can see, it's actually quite interesting. You see there's also and I've noticed this in the last 10 years probably, is the retro scooter clubs where people are dressed up in 1950s gear.
But you're missing one big element in it.
Go on, tell me.
It's called the Solex.
Right, okay.
Which is even more dangerous if you explain it. Because it looks like a bike with a motor on in front of it.
Yeah.
So you have this normal bike.
Yeah.
That's you get a motor. You put it in front, on the front wheel. And it, it automatically makes the wheel of your bike go faster.
Yeah, yeah. But...
And you wear a leather helmet.
You wear a leather helmet for this because this is the thing. Because the old...
And wear a leather jacket because that makes you look cool.
This is the thing. So you have this thing with Solex and scooter clubs and they're very much... like this sort of big enthusiast club. I've seen these around Alphen and the Rhine. They're really growing again, these things, where you see a load of... Well, let's be fair, middle-aged men, wearing what looks like they've just walked out of a First World War pilots conference, you know, with leathers, leather helmets, you know, and it does look like Biggles or, you know, Manfred von Richthofen, out for a spin on supercharged bikes, the Solex, or the old-fashioned scooters.
Yeah.
And it's not mods and rockers kind of stuff. This is like... Yeah, farmers.
But you can also do it for your bachelor party.
Yeah, and it's a bachelor party where you can do this, that you can go along and hang out with your mates dressed up in 1950s gear.
Yeah.
Being a scooter freak. And it's very much like a Dutch kind of rural phenomenon, wasn't it? It was very much like the case if you're in the middle of bloody nowhere and it's flat and the wind's going.
Yeah.
That's why the scooters became really, you know, you don't want to be cycling through the polders.
No.
With no way apart from your legs to get you through, you know, from, from Alphen on the Rhine or to Kouderkerk on the Rhine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're missing out on one thing that's completely disappeared, at least in Leiden.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bierfiets.
Oh, yeah, the bierfiets.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And if you're not familiar with this concept...
Oh, Jesus.
It's a squared kind of... immovable object with middle-aged men on top of it.
Yeah.
And way too much pedals.
Yeah.
And in the middle, if a proper beer feeds, there's a bar in the middle.
Oh, God, yeah.
So it's like a movable bar.
Yeah.
That you use or you move around by pedaling on it.
Oh, God, those things. I still think I've seen them once or twice in Amsterdam, but I think they banned them again in Amsterdam, didn't they?
Yeah, I understand that because it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially with the combination of drinking.
Yeah, and let's be honest, men, you know, at their most wayward.
Yeah.
And drunken.
Yes, it's a perfect way to move around the city, yell, get drunk.
And cycle to a canal.
Very annoying.
Yeah, and also cycle to a canal.
Yeah, easily.
And this is the thing, because they're absolute death traps, aren't they? You're throwing, it's the equivalent of having a huge kind of contraption that whose weight cannot be controlled.
No.
Driven by drunken men into a canal.
Yeah, and it's not really sure who is in charge.
No. It's wild. I haven't seen one for about 10 years.
The group is in charge of moving.
Yeah, I've not seen one for ages.
No.
I mean, they should just have them in fields. I mean, you just went around a field, you could deal with it. But like, you're in the middle of... I remember seeing one on one of the Grachtengordels in Amsterdam. I was thinking, it's going to smash cars up, this thing. It's going to go over a bridge. You know, and they were trying to get over a bridge. And of course, like the bridges, it could see that no one had the puff to get over the bridge.
Getting up is a challenge, but going down is even worse.
Oh, God, yeah. Because you can't stop.
There probably is a way to stop it, but not in as a group.
No. Yeah, the beer feet. Oh, my God. There you go. Eccentric means of conveyance.
Yeah.
I think on that, I think we've given enough sort of thought bubbles.
Yes.
To our listeners for 1 week.
We give you enough homework to look up the most strangest kinds of bikes.
Yeah. So, yeah, in five words, explain the difference between a snorfeet and a scooter. And with that, we'll see you next time. All the best. Take care. See you soon.